Well, welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and now to the largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. I'd like to repeat what I consider to be the statement of the decade. Responding to the UN's comments that the Israelis needed to resolve Hamas's grievances, Mr. Netanyahu asked, "What grievance can we resolve with Hamas? Their grievance is that we exist." And yet, in a world jaundiced, in a world polluted, in a world that really hasn't recovered from 135 CE, when Hadrian, after instigating the fight by declaring that he was going to rename Jerusalem after himself, that after they, in 70, the Romans had destroyed the temple, they were going to build a new shrine, and the new shrine would be a shrine to Hadrian as God, along with Jupiter. And then after sending a general to slaughter Jews indiscriminately and rape their women, Hadrian came up with the plan that he would lure Jews back to Israel so that he could wipe them out by saying, "You know, I have a new plan. We'll rebuild the old temple here. Why don't y'all Jews just come on back?" And as soon as they did, he announced his true intent and began to slaughter them with the largest army ever assembled on earth at that time. Today, the world is hostile to Jews, to the Torah, which Hadrian saw to it that every copy of the Torah was burned. Hadrian saw to it that everything associated with Yahweh was illegal. His testimony, his covenant, his invitations to meet with him 7 times a year, his Shabbat, circumcision, which was the sign of the covenant. They were all illegal. The promised land was renamed Philistina at the time, after one of Israel's extinct enemies. And virtually every Jew was either murdered or enslaved. We haven't moved very far from that day. World opinion still sides with Hadrian. It's kind of interesting today that Hadrian is considered one of the 5 greatest Roman emperors. That he is considered a humanist. He's considered just. And yet, he set the stage for what we're witnessing. Even in the words of the United Nations, where in spite of the fact that Hamas picked this fight by sending hundreds of rockets into Israel, all to kill Israeli citizens, and that Israel is only responding to the rocket attacks trying to rid Gaza of rockets, the United Nations taking the same ploy that was schemed by Hadrian, through their top human rights official, has condemned Israel's military in the Gaza Strip, saying that war crimes may have been committed. You know, it's hard for me to read this without wanting to scream. And it's every day now, as we consider the news and how jaundiced people have become, how immoral, how irrational, how just utterly unjust, misguided, mean, merciless people have become. Go ahead. See, we have actually Scott is running Shattering Myths today, so we're back to having a gentleman whose voice I have come to respect.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
That should really frame up everything, how any question you could possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
If Hamas said today that
yes.
we're putting down our arms
yes.
and we're not fighting anymore.
In fact, beyond that, we're going to give you every rocket and every bomb that we have made. We're going to disavow terror. We're going to give up every terror weapon today.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If they would do that, what happens?
Israel would say, thank you very much. They would withdraw, and they would never bother Gaza again.
And then, yeah.
Immediately. Immediately. They'd say, yeah. Thank you. I don't know what got over you, but what a wonderful commitment. I'm going to take you at your word, which hasn't been worth much in the past, and going to believe that you actually mean it, and Israel would withdraw from Gaza, and that would be it.
This is everything we wanted. You know,
right.
Fantastic.
All we've ever wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
stop killing us, and we have no interest in interfering with you in any way.
Now, if you flip that question around, and if
okay.
Israel were to lay down their arms and say, we're done mm-hmm. with this, we don't want to fight anymore, we're not fighting anymore, we're finished with this, and they put down their arms, what happens?
Israel wouldn't survive a month.
Yeah, because everybody around them wants to kill them.
By the way, everybody in the world, everyone knows that. Every one of the Muslims that are protesting everywhere in the world and rioting everywhere in the world, all of the Muslims that are declaring on the internet that they're ready to shed their blood for Palestine, a mythical place, every one of them knows the truth. That if Israel were to lay down its weapons and stop defending itself, Israel would not survive a month. The people would be completely annihilated, and the land would be utterly destroyed.
And that's what makes this so disgusting to me. Is people try and paint Israel like they're doing something evil
right.
and wrong and things like
right.
that, and they're not attacking people. They're defending.
No.
They're sitting in their area, and they're staying there, and they're not doing anything. It's not like they're going out and
well, no, Israel is responding, and yeah. I think, I'm not personally. I don't. Well, I'm not going to condemn Israel's use of its military to defend its people, to protect them from terror weapons. If you were to compare, for example, what Israel is doing compared to what Britain did, the last time that a group of people, enraged, picked a fight and began to send terror weapons into another country's cities was when the Nazis did it to Britain in the Second World War. It's the only parallel to what we're witnessing. And what Britain did in response was firebombed German cities. They killed hundreds of thousands of Germans. They didn't warn the Germans, by the way, we're going to roast you alive. They just did it. White phosphorus. In fact, they got the Americans to help them roast hundreds of thousands of people alive. The Brits did not care if they bombed civilians or if they bombed the German war machine. They said that the Germans have sent rockets into our cities for the purpose of killing our people, and so we are going to respond by annihilating German civilians so that we break Germans' will to fight. That's how Britain responded. No one anywhere in the world at the time said, you know, it's inappropriate for you to kill hundreds of thousands, burning them alive, women and children, in your response to this war. No one. Now, Israel is actually at a far worse situation than was Britain. Because while Muslim guidance systems are as misguided as our Muslims, the amount of rockets being fired into Israel dwarfs the amount of rockets that were flown into Britain. It just dwarfs them. It's not even remotely comparable. And if you consider the size of Israel compared to the size of Britain, then the carnage that is being brought against Israel is in the range of 1,000 times greater. Not 20% greater, not 50% greater, 1,000 times greater. And Israel, rather than saying, the hell with you, you're sending these rockets from civilian areas, we're just going to flatten them. We have plenty of white phosphorus. We'll just burn you alive. We will do what Britain did. And we will destroy the people's will to fight. We will absolutely rid the world of this parasite. They instead have sent leaflets telling the people, you know that you are living directly above a tunnel that has been designed to hide and facilitate rockets and rocket launchers. We're going to take it out. You need to move. Here's our suggestion as to where you can move and be safe. But understand, if you do not move, the building is going to come down. Then they text everyone, and they send a phone call to everyone, and then they begin by dropping dummy bombs, that what they call the knock on the roof. Never in world history has any country gone so far to protect civilians. If a child dies, if a woman dies, it is their choice. Maybe not the child's choice, in that it's their parents' choice to have kept them in harm's way, deliberately keeping them in harm's way. Not a single innocent person has been killed. Everyone who has died has chosen to be a martyr on behalf of the most despicable religion, the most vicious religion that has ever been conceived. That's the truth. And yet you don't have today one journalist among 1,000 who is willing to tell the truth. You don't have one statesman among 1,000 willing to tell the truth. And you have riots around the world with Muslims proving just how enraged and deadly and vicious they are. With every one of those riots around the world screaming the same thing that the Hamas militants have been screaming for years, death to Jews. Yes, you see, the grievance that Hamas has with Israel is that Israel exists. We'll be back. I strongly suspect that this is how Moshe felt, how Yeshayah felt, Isaiah, how Yirmiyah felt, Jeremiah, most certainly how Hosea felt. That you're sharing the truth with people who just don't want to listen. You're offering people guidance to come to know God and what he's offering, and no one wants to hear it. That you're telling people that they're headed in the wrong direction, that they're extraordinarily misguided, that they're actually irritating God, but to no avail. It's as if you're shouting into the wind. It's frustrating. I think I shared with the listeners on the Blog Talk Radio program, Yada Yada Radio, last Friday, that I'm spending most of my time now trying to complete a chapter that shows how Greece and Rome created the environment that made Christianity, a religion, wholly hostile to its own origins, its own roots, possible. And that my goal is to continue to write about the last days. And so I've just finished studying the two most extraordinary of Yahweh's prophets, Yahshua, Isaiah, and Yirmiyah, Jeremiah. One of the things that was really interesting in Yahshua, Isaiah, is several times in the text, Yahweh is talking about how most everyone's view is the antithesis of his own, and how people who are religious and political and militaristic are all off on their crusades, but their crusades are all in opposition to him, adversarial to him. And he says, I looked searching for someone that I could work with that would convey the truth, that would wake people up. And there was no one. Just was no one. You know, I've wondered many times because, you know, I'm nobody special. I'm as flawed as anyone. Why in the world were so many of the profound insights that we've come to realize about Yahweh and his Torah, about God's disdain for government, for politics, for religion? Why was I chosen to find and then share these truths? Sadly, because there was no one else. God is so unpopular, his people, his promised land, his Torah, his covenant relationship, he himself, his name, are so unpopular that God has to scrape up the dregs like me to find someone willing to share the truth, because it is so unpopular, so contrary to where the world is going. You know, it really doesn't matter where you look today. What's taking place in Gaza and the world's reaction to it, the UN, rather than condemning Hamas, condemning Israel. ISIS, the Islamic State, now ravaging Syria and Iraq, making everything America poured trillions of dollars into and thousands of lives moot. All destroyed. Trying to create, in fact, having created a civil war in the Ukraine and now trying to create World War III between the United States and Russia. You have Thailand that, you know, has gone to a military junta. Egypt to a military junta. Tunisia, after the Islamic Reformation, just had the worst terrorist act in the nation's history perpetrated on its people. After the United States saw to it that Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown by an assemblage of Mujahideen. The Mujahideen are killing one another in now what is open civil war in Libya. Iran is not only on the cusp of a nuclear bomb, the negotiations with them to slow down the process have failed. Ethiopia and Kenya are being ravaged as we speak by Muslims. The Islamic genocide in the Sudan has killed 2.5 million people. Look at the world today. Look at the mess that exists in this world today. There is no good news. There is only bad news. But fortunately, there is one hope. But that hope is in a book that most have discarded. It's in the Torah. And its author is Yahweh. I would encourage you to consider what he has to say. Delay. Hold an emergency debate at the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva. That Israel's military offensive had not done enough to protect civilians. Oh, not done enough. By what standard? Because the standard that they've deployed goes hugely beyond what any country in the history of the world has done. Hugely. There is no country in the history of the world that has notified civilians of an impending attack and encouraged them to leave. Told them where the attack's going to take place, told them the reason the attack's going to take place, and told them to leave by leaflets, by phone call, by text message, by loudspeaker, by even dropping dummy bombs for the purpose of getting their attention. No one. Making their own people vulnerable. Putting their own people at risk to protect civilians. In a fight against an enemy that only is interested in killing civilians. That's their sole interest. I mean, you couldn't be more errant in this view if you were to search for what is the opposite of truth? Then she condemned Hamas for indiscriminate attacks. So she's telling Israel that the world, that Israel has committed war crimes against civilians, but Hamas is just indiscriminate attacks. Because the rockets don't have guidance systems. There seems to be a strong possibility that international law has been violated in a manner that could amount to a war crime, said Ms. Pillay. Yeah. The crime, according to the United Nations, is that Israel exists. It's the same crime that Hamas, the same grievance that Hamas has with Israel. You know, when the United Nations was brought into Lebanon multiple times, when Israel negotiated a treaty and ceasefire with Hezbollah, the UN said, "Oh, we'll come in and we'll make certain that Hezbollah honors the agreement and disarms." And the United Nations served only to protect the flow of weapons into Lebanon on behalf of Hezbollah. Israel, which claims the UN Human Rights Council is biased, and well, so would anybody who is informed and rational, is unlikely to cooperate with any UN investigation. The UN says that 74% of those killed in Gaza are civilians. Now, let me give you a clue. I know the UN doesn't have a clue, but it's not 74% of those killed in Gaza are civilians. It's 100%. 100%. Gaza doesn't have an army. There is no military in Gaza. There is no distinction in Gaza between an Islamic jihadist and an average Muslim walking down the street. 100% of those who have been killed are civilians. This number, some percentage, is just so utterly stupid. And by the way, do not think for a moment that Muslim men are more prone to hatred, are more prone to jihad, are more prone to shedding their blood as martyrs for their religion than men. It isn't true. In most Islamic countries, the women are more shrill than are the men. It's the women that mutilate their daughters. It's the women that urge their men to be jihadists. There is an Islamic cleric in Egypt. He's banned because he spoke out against the Muslim Brotherhood for being a little too ruthless. And his big plea with Muslims in Egypt is to divorce their wives. And he says, you know, every Muslim man in Egypt needs to divorce their wives because their wives are the ones that are inspiring them to be deadly, to be fundamentalist, to be jihadist. The women are the inspiration in Islam for its ruthlessness. They're never innocent victims. This quote is from the UN Assistant General, Secretary General at the Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Civilians in Gaza have no safe place to go, as 44% of the land has been declared a no-fly zone by the Israeli army, and they've got no place to go because 44% is a no-fly zone. I'm mistaken here. Hamas doesn't have a helicopter lift system, nor a situation whereby that flying civilians out of a community is the better choice than having them ride a bus.
Not many civilians do.
The fact that Israel says this is a no-fly zone doesn't mean that, first of all, it means also that, that 56% would be safe haven. But beyond that, Gaza's a small place. Much of Gaza is open land. Much of Gaza isn't involved in firing rockets into Israel. Israel said, you can go to any one of these places. You can walk there. You can ride there. They have given them directions of safe havens. The civilians don't go. They don't go because they want to die. You know, Islam is the only religion ever conceived where death is the highest calling. Where dying is the only guarantee of the Islamic paradise. The stain of blood is your admission into Allah's brothel. If you don't think so, read the Quran, read the Hadith. Muhammad never once gave Muslims a reason to live. Only a reason to die. Families are taking the heart-wrenching decision to split into different locations. Mother and son to one, father and daughter to another, hoping to maximize the chance of one part of the family survives. Bull crap. I think I can say it on the radio, right? Bull crap.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, mothers and sons don't ever hang together in Islam, and nor do fathers and daughters. But beyond that, they're not given a heart-wrenching decision as to where to split up. The boys and the fathers are choosing to pick up weapons to kill Israelis. And the mothers and daughters are hunkering down together right over the sites of rocket launchers for the express purpose of dying as martyrs. That's what they're doing. There isn't a single case where what she just depicted is true. Not one. It's all a myth to make it look like these are poor, poor oppressed people's heart-wrenching decisions. The world is better without them. Now, I said earlier that I'm not, I don't agree with Israel's response. I have major issues with Israel's response. The first, Israel uses the term Palestinian. Shame on them. Netanyahu, every Israeli knows there's no such thing as a Palestinian. And the moment you acquiesce to the lie, you lose the high moral ground. Yes, I know that the entire world uses the lie, and so the lie is now so ubiquitous that you almost sound crazy when you tell people there is no such thing as a Palestinian, and there is no place called Palestine. And what is Israel today, particularly the West Bank, has never, ever been Philistia. The Philistines were clustered in what is today southern Gaza. Not even where Gaza, it wouldn't even go as far north as where Gaza City is. They were clustered in southern Gaza. The Assyrians wiped them out over 2,500 years ago. They don't exist. There is no legacy of them. The modern Arab Muslims who are living there have absolutely no connection whatsoever to the Philistines. I shared with you the history of Hadrian so that you would know that when the province of Ayuda, of Judah, was destroyed on as a final solution by Hadrian, that prior to salting the land, he renamed the place. He knew it was Yehuda. So did everyone alive. It's God's chosen name for the place. It means related to Yah. And so if you're going to begin with a lie, then nothing which you say from that point on matters. So I have a terrible issue with them. The second issue is that this is not a nationalistic foe. And by calling them Palestinians, it gives you a sense that this is a race, that this is a nationalistic cause. It isn't. It is a religious war. And so what Netanyahu needs to do, if he's going to be credible, if he's going to prevail, is to start not only sharing the truth, but the whole truth, and call the adversaries who are perpetrating the terror against them Muslims. Just right in their face. They are Muslims. Period. And then to share the 1400-year history of Islam. How Muhammad was the most despicable man who ever lived. How Muhammad, after he was thrown out of Mecca in shame for the satanic verses and for his mythical wild-ass ride to the non-existent temple in Jerusalem, formed a pact with Arabs to wage war against all humankind. And over the next 10 years, his principal prey, his primary victims were Jews. His men raped the women, enslaved the children, and murdered the men. Nothing has changed. The Islamic State has seized four additional oil fields. They did so when they swept through northern Iraq last month. In addition, they have now seized many of the largest oil fields in Syria. They're selling their crude and refined gasoline to finance their caliphate. And the Islamic State's funding comes from a number of different sources, but the most prevalent is stolen crude. It really is the basis of Islam. If it were not for crude, Islam would be incapable of perpetrating terror on anyone. There would still be Muslims. It's just that they would be unarmed. There would still be Muslims. It's just that they wouldn't be engaged in jihad. They would be trying to eke out a subsistence living. You know, they'd be tending sheep someplace. There really would not be any capability of Muslims with serious weapon systems if it were not for crude. Now, the Islamic State does finance itself other ways. They rob banks. They, like the mafia, they have their protection tax. If you don't want your daughter raped, you pay me. If you're a Christian there or a Shia Muslim, if you want to live, you pay the jizya tax, and which means you confiscate all your possessions. They steal property. They confiscate weapon systems as they go into to towns. So they do have other means, but their primary means of financing their movement is through crude oil. It makes them by far, by a magnitude of 1,000, the best financed Islamic terrorist organization in the history of the world. Near the northern city of Mosul, and the Islamic State has taken over the Najma and Qayyarah fields. Well, further to the south, near Tariq, it has overrun the Himran and Ajil fields. They now sell that oil. The oil fields in the Islamic State's hands are modest compared to Iraq's giant fields near Kirkuk and Basra, which are are under Kurdish hands and the central government controls. Kirkuk's under the Kurds, and Basra is under the Shiite government. But it's more than enough to enrich the Islamic State with billions of dollars. But the monopoly over fuel in those territories that is captured gives the Islamic State leverage over other armed Sunni factions who would threaten its dominance in Iraq and in Syria. The Iraqi officials say that in recent weeks, the group has transported oil from these captured fields and refineries throughout Syria, and then in Syria, it uses traitors. And it's not only providing fuel to some 2 million customers directly, but selling the fuel through Syria to traders around the world. Typically, I mean, they're pretty smart. What they're doing here, I mean, they're thieves, but they're smart thieves. They're selling their fuel at about $25 a barrel. You know, the world market's $100 a barrel. So they're selling their fuel at 25% of the world market price. That gives the traders the opportunity to triple the amount of money that they get by selling the product on the world market. And so all of the number of people willing to buy oil at $25 a barrel in Syria from the Islamic State is immense, realizing that every barrel they buy, they will triple their investment. And then the international oil companies that can buy oil at $75 a barrel, that's $25 profit more than they would make on the international market on a commodity where typically a $5 a barrel profit would be considered extraordinarily good. So this article says we have confirmed reports showing that the Islamic State is shipping crude throughout Syria and to Syria's neighbors, and that the Islamic State has made a multi-billion dollar profit from this illegal trade. Now, what is the U.S. doing to stop that? We seem to be fixated on the Ukraine and Israel. What about the Islamic State? We'll be back.